thanks for coming out. I really respect you for coming out to talk about this subject. It is a difficult subject for many of us. We all have our own baggage with it. No matter how healthy we think we are, we can't live in this world without having some hurt, some guilt, some problems. And I understand that it's going to be heard through different filters. And I also need to explain that I probably will offend someone tonight. Not only because I'm a straight shooter and tell it like it is type of person, but I'm also real comfortable talking about this. I do it enough that it's not awkward for me as much as it is for other people. So if I offend you, please just let me know. I will apologize. We'll make it right. And this is a difficult subject, not only because of the baggage we bring in, but also because I think there needs to be a tension that we have to hold. I say raising sexually healthy children in a sexually dangerous world. All right, this world is sexually dangerous. Our culture is sexually dangerous. And yet I don't want to have everybody walk out of here afraid and all paranoid and then just hovering over their kids in fear, because that won't help. I also don't want you just to say, oh, well, God's got it covered and no big deal, you know, so we can keep our heads in the sand. We have to find some middle ground where we do understand and we will face the seriousness and the potential dangers of this of our kids' sexuality, but also we want to be able to be hopeful and positive. And so I hope that I can give that to you tonight. This should be a course and not just a one-night shot, so we're going to go fast. We won't be able to cover everything. I am going to save time for question and answer, so hopefully you can ask questions. And if you're not comfortable just speaking them up, you can write them down and pass them forward to me, and we'll do it that way, either way that you want. So, to that end, we will begin, and my goal tonight is not to teach you how to have the talk or to have the talks, because I think that what we really need, my goal is to equip you to mentor your children in the area of sexuality. As a mentor, you will begin this work when they're toddlers. So I hope there's some parents here with babies, because I will speak to you. And you will help them navigate this their sexuality throughout their life. My kids are 30 and 32, and we're still talking about sex. All right, and it's a privilege to be able to talk to them about it. All right. So to that end, to be a mentor, you want to know certain things. To be a good mentor, an effective mentor, you have to have a vision for where you want to take them. You know, it's not, if you just say, well, I just hope they turn out okay, I don't know that that's a specific enough vision. You need to understand the goals you need to have, correct goals to help them achieve that vision. A good mentor will know what kids are hearing and what they're thinking. And what they're hearing will shock you. A good mentor will know the truth about sex, and they will also know the lies about sex, and will be able to teach and model the truth. A good mentor will know how to converse with kids so that they want to listen to you and they want to talk to you. Both are important. And then a good mentor will learn how to protect their kids. We need to become mentors because kids are exposed to sexual messages and sexual values on a regular basis. It used to be that kids could easily find porn. Even back in my day, it was pretty easy to find magazines or to find movies. But now you need to understand it is impossible for your kids to avoid sexual messages, sexual images, pornography. I went to a conference where a man was giving a talk on pornography and the problems of pornography, and that he had a serious problem with it, ended up in jail, and now he was an advocate, you know, for porn-free type stuff. And at one point in his lecture, he gave a slide presentation of porn. And I was so offended. I'm like, this guy just is using this as an excuse to watch porn. I can't believe he dragged this on and showed so much and it was so gross. And my friends that were with me started laughing and they said, Bev, first of all, it was 30 seconds. It wasn't a long time. Second of all, he showed nothing that wasn't on magazine covers, billboard, TV commercials. But, you know, we see a commercial for a Victoria's Secret model and it goes like this. But when you put 30 seconds of it together, it seems much more intense. Now, our kids are getting this where constantly. You are, they are, and we have to understand this. You know, and we know that they're exposed to this because we know that advertisers know that sex sells, and so it's everywhere. But we also need to know, please note this, that advertisement sells values to our kids about sex. It's not just selling products through sex. It's promoting and selling values. So I thought of, when I was thinking of this, we all know what underwear is for. Underwear is to hide private parts, and you wear underwear under your clothes, right? That's why they're called underwear. Well, what does Victoria's Secret teach our little girls about underwear? That it is supposed to be revealed, and you're supposed to show your underwear. And for what purpose? To be beautiful, to be desired. That's a value. So I was looking up kid advertisements, and I got to Calvin Klein. The first one that came up was a teenager, 18 years old, in Calvin Klein jeans, with her underclothes showing, with the big line, who says underwear have to be under anything? Okay. That's what your kids are faced. That's why I say please consider being a mentor. Also, a mentor will pray, and they will keep praying. And when your kids are teenagers, you will pray and pray with the red alert. Because you not only pray for them, you know, we can give God our desires. We would like them to be healthy. We'd like them to be safe and protected. But more important, our prayers have to be, let us be the mentors that we need to be for our kids. All right, because that is a prayer that can be answered. So let's start with what I talked about as the things that mentors need to know, and we'll start with vision. We need to, like I say, have a vision for where our kids are going. So when I ask you, what do you want for your children in regard to their sexuality? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? If it's negative, I don't want them to have sexual relations before they're ready. I don't want them to be taken advantage of. I don't want. That's not good enough. All right? Negative visions do not really help. They are not effective. And so we want to have a positive vision. And, you know, if I think in a positive terms, what do we want? I'd say we want our kids to be sexually healthy so that they can enjoy a fulfilling sexual relationship. Okay? We want them, even though if you have little girls that are toddlers, you might think, no, I don't even want to think about them in this category. You will one day want them to have sexually healthy relationships. And so for that, since we are, I don't know what everybody's religious views are here, but since you have come to a church meeting on sexuality, we do believe, and I will be teaching, that the God of the Bible, is the creator and designer of sex, and he has a purpose for sex, and he has a context for sex, and he claims that when we express our sexuality in that context for that purpose, he said, verdict is, it's very good, and it's very pleasurable. And that's what he wants for us. He says that the closer we stay to his design, the more healthy and the more satisfying it will be. The further we go away from his design, the more problems and dissatisfaction that we will have. And so, you know, we hope that they can have an idea of the meaning, purpose of sex so that they can enjoy it. But our vision has to be more than just that we hope they have this. Our vision, I believe, has to include that they have confidence that they can choose to express their sexuality for its attendant purpose. And there's a difference between, I just hope this magically happens, and as mentors, I want them to have the confidence that they can choose. Teens don't think they really can choose. They think their urges, their sexual urges, choose for them. I just can't help it. They think peer pressure chooses for them. They think boyfriends, girlfriends choose for them, because that's where they feel the pressure. And so my thing is, my positive vision is, our children can choose to express their sexuality for its intended purpose and enjoy all the goodness it was designed to offer. So that's where you want to, you know, you can make up your own vision, but that's mine. All right, now to accomplish this, achieve this vision, we need to have some goals, some correct goals. Goals, you have goals when it comes to your kid's sexuality, whether you've thought it through or not. You have goals, and we make goals. These are plans that we have to guarantee our success as parents in this area. All right? And so, and it's right for our success, our sense of success in being able to teach our kids, mentor our kids. It's right that our goals should lead to success. But then it's important to have the right goals. How will we know if we have the right goals or what our goals are? Well, when it comes to the day where we realize whether we failed or succeeded, we'll know what our goals are. Because if we succeeded, we'll have peace. If we have failed at our goals, we will be angry, we'll be depressed, we'll be guilt-ridden. And so we have to look at what our goals are. So when you think about goals that you have as a parent, in the area of your kid's sexuality, what are they? I think common goals are to protect our children from sexual harm and, as much as we can, bad choices. And I think our goal is our vision statement. Our goal is that our children will choose to express this. I don't know if you feel that, if you've had similar goals, but Those were definitely my goals. All right, let me tell you, those are not good goals. Someone's laughing. Why? Those are not good goals because a good goal can only be dependent on you and God to accomplish. We control our children and protect them 24/7? No, so that's not a good goal. Do we have control over their choices? No. And so that's not a good goal. We cannot, we can't make them choose. So if these aren't good goals, then what is a good goal? If we fail at this and we, these are our goals and we fail, we will be angry. We will be depressed. We will be guilt-ridden and distraught. And angry, depressed, guilt-ridden mentors are not effective. When bad things have happened to kids and their parents respond in anger or depression, that can cause more problems for their kids. Okay, so we don't want to go there. All right, so what's a good goal? To be an effective mentor. And that's what you're learning to be tonight. And we will, as a mentor, we will do everything in our power to protect our kids. And we're going to talk more about this later. But we also will remember we can't protect them from everything. And so we will learn how to trust God with this. All right? We will expect and be prepared for problems and failures on our kids' part, and we will become effective at praying. I will say that again. So then these, the things that we had before, are great godly desires. We should pray that we can protect our kids from everything or almost everything. We should pray that they can achieve this vision we have for them. But if they fail at a desire, in our sense of success or being a good parent is not dependent on desires, then we deal with disappointment or frustration, but not anger and despair. Does that make sense? All right, so let's think about what kids are hearing and thinking. What are they hearing? First of all, I hope you know this, they are hearing about sex much younger than you think. My youngest is 30, so this is 24 years ago at Calumet. In kindergarten, she learned about French kissing at Calumet. In kindergarten, she came home and said, "Mommy, what's French kissing?" So expect them to, again, when things are, when they're exposed to it all the time, expect it younger than you think, okay? And be ready for that. The other thing that they're hearing all over the place is whatever Hollywood and the sex industry are promoting as exciting, that's what is exciting. That's what's cool. That's what's good. And so threesomes, they even have a name for it in the Westerville schools. I forget what it is, but those are just like, if you're in high school, that is just part of the routine. They are hearing that intercourse is sex, but anything else, oral sex, you know, other things is not sex, so it's kind of okay. You know, and all good Christians kind of fall for that too. I do a lot of premarital. When couples come in, I'm like, "How you doing in this area?" "Well, we're struggling, but we're not having sex." So what does that mean? Yeah. So we believe that, so it's not surprising our kids believe that. But they do have the potential to have a lot of hurt if they're just thinking, I'm okay as long as I don't do this one act. Another thing that's becoming incredibly big for kids today is that it's totally cool to be genderless. 15 years ago, it was really cool to be bisexual, and you wanted to be able to be, you know, able to go either way. But now it is that you're genderless. You do not identify yourself as heterosexual or homosexual or lesbian because you just love whoever you love, and gender has nothing to do with it. Okay? This is what they're hearing. This is what you're going to need to be dialoguing with them as mentors to figure out, to help them navigate their choices and what they believe. What are they thinking about? Because this is important too. And what they're thinking about is what makes sex good, what's going to make it fun, what am I missing out on if I'm not having sex, and what makes me desirable. I was just talking to a young girl earlier this morning, and she said, I knew in high school my value as a girl was based on what I would give and how I looked. And when she said give, she didn't mean spiritually or emotionally or friendship-wise, she meant physically. Okay? So this is what she has in her mind. I'm going to talk about whether that's true or not later. But this is what she said to me with tears as she was talking about some of her experiences. All right. So all the information they get when you are talking to them about your views or God's view of sex, you've got to realize it's going through the filter. Well, is this good? Is this right? You know, will this be satisfying? Is this going to make me cool and acceptable? Is it going to make me desirable? Because that's kind of what they want to know. Now, we need to understand that there are two sources of information that is going to answer those questions for them. There is what the world has to say, and there's what God and the Bible has to say about what makes someone desirable and what makes sex good. And they're very different. And I want us to look at these and study them. And I want you to I want to study them because, remember, good mentors need to know what's the truth about sex and what's lies. But also, I want us to look at this so that we can see what makes more sense. Christians do a horrible job of defending the Christian biblical view of sexuality. The first message that your kids are going to get is that the sex industry and Hollywood are the experts. They know what's really fun and good and desirable and exciting. And they're going, what do they go hear about God? He is the killjoy. He is boring. He wants to restrict you instead of give you pleasure. And, you know, we are truly, nowadays, the Christian view is dangerous because it's so judgmental, because it's so restrictive. And so they're going to be wrestling with this. And guess what? You just saying, well, they're wrong and I'm right, is not going to work. Okay? So we want to break this down. We want to understand it ourselves so that you can be educated and you can educate your kids. So what are they going to hear from the world? The world's view defines sex as a physical act of pleasure. You know, yes, there's procreation if you're in the more scientific, but it's basically considered a physical act of pleasure. And we are sexual beings. We have sexual desires that need to be satisfied. And so it's about an act that satisfies. The purpose then is to satisfy the craving. And the craving is not just physical. It was fascinating. I was talking to about 150 high school boys a couple months ago. And I said, what do you really want from sex? Besides fun, I get it, you want fun. What else do you want from sex? The guys said, I want affirmation. I want to feel like I'm a guy that's respected and admired. I want closeness. I want to feel acceptable and like I belong. So all of us have these cravings that go deeper than just a physiological urge. And the world says, that's fine. So when should you have sex? Whenever you want to satisfy one of these urges. Whenever you feel you need it, because it's about getting what you want. And then the world teaches that to have good relationships or to have those benefits of self-affirmation or self-esteem or a sense of closeness, it's dependent on how good the act is. And so you have to find the right partner. You have to find the right technique. You have to be able to do it, just so, because everything is dependent on the quality of the act. And so when people who aren't convinced or believe this, aren't convinced of God's way, and I tell them, you shouldn't be having sex before marriage, their comment is, well, I would never buy a car without a test drive, so why would I, marry someone without a test drive? Why? Because everything's dependent on the quality of the act. All right. Now, when we think about what we want from sex, I love this quote because I think it's so true. People are looking for sex that satisfies more than just their temporary physiological urges. They are seeking for a form of sex that touches the deep longings of their soul. And we all want soul-satisfying sex. We want a sexual relationship where we feel better about ourselves instead of worse, where we feel accepted and desired, where we feel like we're successful at being able to love our partner. That's soul-satisfying sex. And the world says, get with the right person, get the right technique down, do it in the time when you want it most, and it'll happen. Now we got to think, does that make sense? Okay, what does God say? God says that sex is more than a physical act. It's a relational act of love between a man and a woman. One man and one woman. And it's a relational act because more than just the bodies are coming together. The mind, the soul, the heart, the spirits come together. And it is based on love. It's a loving act. And all the songs have tried to convince us different. What's love got to do with it? We try to say we want this without love. But I was a child of the 70s in the sexual revolution. And when I was working on campus one day, a coworker came in and told me about an orgy that she was involved with and multiple partners the night before. And as she was telling me how great this was and trying to convince herself, I think, as well, she told me, she goes, this one guy it was the best with him. And I'm like, what made it so good, And she said, when I got to him, he took a few minutes to talk to me, told me he had noticed me, that he was waiting to be with me, that he knew I was something special. What's he trying to do? He's trying to make it some relational thing. Of course he said it to every girl that he was with. But we want that so bad And we know in our hearts of hearts that it is relational, that even in contexts like that, people will try to make it relational. Okay? Sex is not to get something. Sex was created to celebrate a bond and a commitment. All physical pleasure is more satisfying when it is celebrating something that is, rather than trying to create something. Let's think about when you were little kids and Aunt Bertha comes and you don't know Aunt Bertha. And your mom's all excited about Aunt Bertha, and Aunt Bertha is big and scary. And she comes and is ready to rub your head and grab you, and mom's saying, hug, and you don't know Aunt Bertha. How excited are you to hug Aunt Bertha? Why? Because you're celebrating nothing. But when Papa and Grandma come to visit, and they have loved and invested, and the grandkids see them coming, what happens? They're a run and a hug because they're celebrating the love they share. First dates, blind dates. If you've ever been on a blind date where you try to go to dinner, but it's going south quick. You have nothing to talk about. You have nothing in common. You're uncomfortable. So you go to a movie. Even sitting next to a stranger is uncomfortable, but then you try to hold hands to make something happen. How fun is that? I just kind of like, ugh, you know. But that another first date where someone, a couple really click. They were going to go to a movie, but they spend so much time talking that they can't get to the movie on time. And they have a lot of things in common, and they share fun, and it's a great night, and there was a click. So if there's a hug or a kiss at the end of that night, how fun is it? Why? Because it's celebrating something that's already happened. God has created sex in this way. That he says that sex is always going to be better when it is celebrating and deepening a commitment and a bond that a man and a woman have. The other will give you the satisfying a craving, will give you a quick, intense, immediate satisfaction, but it'll dissipate quickly. But when it's in love and it's celebrating what is happening relationally, then the sexual fulfillment becomes more and more satisfying. Kids need to know that. At age-appropriate time. Okay? Then, the context, if it's about bonding and celebrating commitment and a relational act of love, it makes sense that it's designed for marriage. And we don't have to teach our kids that sex is bad before marriage and then put that ring on the finger and all of a sudden then it's great and amazing. We just teach them that the context is important because it is always supposed to be a celebration. All right? And kids can learn this. And kids get this. They, you know, get a lot of other stuff that they believe too, but they get this. And so then God says the key to great pleasure, great satisfying sex, is the quality of the relationship. It's not the other way around. The world seems to take God's truth and put a bit of truth in it, but then distort it, you know, to come up with wrong information. All right. This is why 1 Corinthians 6 is such a good verse. And the message, this is the message's version, but it's great for kids. I share this with kids a lot. There's more to sex than mere skin on skin. Sex is as much a spiritual mystery as a physical fact. It will bond them with another person. It will help a marriage stay together. The two become one. We must not pursue the kind of sex that avoids commitment and intimacy, leaving us more lonely than ever. The kind of sex that can never become one. So I didn't tell my kids, you can't do this. I'm like, you have a significant choice to make. Do you want to try to get something from sex that was never meant to get? And this way, as pursuing a craving for self, or do you, and that's going to leave you more lonely, or do you want to choose something that will make you really bond with someone and have all the benefits you want? They need to understand that when we elevate the benefits of sex, affirmation, confidence, you know, closeness, intimacy, a sense of well-being, when that's an outcome, when they think they can elevate it to the purpose, it will not work because the partner, first of all, it's outside of God's design, and then second of all, your partner becomes a means to an end instead of someone to love. And how good is sexual fulfillment when someone is an object instead of a person? Okay? All right, let's talk about what makes them desirable. What does the world say? Youth? I used to say, if you're young and beautiful, but I've changed that to just, you have to turn me on. Because we all have different views of what beauty is. So as long as you are hot, as long as you turn me on and make me want to crave you and devour you, that's what makes you desirable. When you are uninhibited and you're cool enough to do whatever Hollywood or the sex industry is saying is cool now, when it's something new and different. So we're always having to buy the latest magazine. We always have to find the new technique, the new toy, because it always has to be new and different. It's basically whatever is seductive, whatever stirs a craving in someone so that they lose control and have to have you, that's what makes you desirable. I think that's why that girl said, my value is based on what I give, if I am uninhibited, if I'm willing to go against, you know, and how I look, if I'm hot. All right, what does God say makes me desirable? Well, if sex is all about a relational act of love and a celebration of a commitment, then to have the ability to commit to someone probably would make you pretty desirable. You know? How satisfied are we with our sexual partner in marriage if we know they're not faithful to us? That they want somebody else and somebody else and somebody else. Yeah. It doesn't make us... That doesn't make them desirable. God says that what makes us desirable is to be able to be open and vulnerable. Because being able to kind of forget yourself and be together in a way where you're crossing over your self-protective, self-absorbed thoughts in intimacy is very much a turn-on and desirable. And to be able to be vulnerable and commit, you've got to be trustworthy. And you've got to learn how to trust. My husband proved to me that he was trustworthy, but I still was petrified to trust. And so God had to show me I had to become trusting as well as allow him to be trustworthy. And I had to become trustworthy, you know, as well. And so really... what makes us desirable as sexy lovers is to be honorable, to be someone we can trust. Now, the world thinks that's garbage, but you know, this makes sense when we think about who do we want as a partner. You know, if I just want a one-night stand just for fun, then I might want somebody that's, I think, is really hot. But if I am looking for a partner to spend my life with, which one makes sense? Okay. Now, why would the world get it so wrong? You know, I think this makes sense. Doesn't God's way make sense? Why do they get it so wrong? Well, the Bible has an answer to that as well. The Bible says that the world is a system of beliefs that has been created by another spiritual being, God's enemy. And the Bible calls him Satan. And it says that he is the ruler of the world system, that he hates God, and he's out to destroy every good thing that God has given us. He hates us. He wants us destroyed because God loves us. And all of God's good gifts he wants to destroy. How does he get us to destroy them? Is to take these gifts and use them in a way or in a context that God never meant them to be used. That's how he ruins it. And so we need to realize, and I think in the right way, it's important for our kids to know this too, that, you know, God's enemy is committed to them having relational alienation through their misuse of their sexuality, personal fragmentation, and he doesn't really want us to enjoy sex. He wants us to be addicted to trying to pursue the craving to get, because he knows it won't satisfy. But if we go for it and then we're, you know, more empty, then what are we going to do? Go for it again and again and again, and then it becomes an addiction. And then he has us. You know, we know that sexual relationships do and often do alienate. You talk to kids and they're like, we know who's having sex because they're fighting more. There's more jealousy. There's more possessiveness. And so it does cause alienation when there's not the security of commitment. And then there is personal fragmentation because we do give a piece of ourself to someone, and the more that we give, the more we're fragmented. Okay. But we need to also tell our kids, this is the good news. We don't want to just tell them the bad news. But God designed sex so that they could be relationally fulfilled. You know, studies show you're not going to find it in Vogue or Playboy magazines, but studies show that the people who express the most sexual satisfaction in life are couples who have been married to the same partner for 20 plus years. Now, the world tells you that's when it's going south. They're done, they're bored, it's boring. But studies show that that's just the opposite. Yeah. So if you've been married under 20 years, you can be excited. The best is yet to come. And God says that when we live as sexual beings, expressing it within the context of marriage, that it does help give wholeness to ourselves. We don't lose ourselves because we become one with another person. We become more whole. And he's the one that gave us our nerve endings, and he created us, so he wants it to be satisfying. All right. So, and looking at what to teach our kids, I love this verse. I used to think, boring, but I love it now. God's plan, and we can say this to our kids, is to make you holy. And that entails a clean cut with sexual immorality. And when he says sexual immorality, please put this note down because it's important. It's not just talking about acts to stay away from. He's saying, stay away from the belief system that the world gives you that's not true, that's out to hurt you. So stay away from sexual lies. Stay away from, sexual lies. That's what immorality is. Every one of you should learn to control your body, keeping it pure and treating it with respect, and never regard it as an instrument for self-gratification, as do those who have no knowledge of God. You cannot break this rule without in some way cheating another person. When we misuse our bodies, and we will end up misusing someone else, and we will it causes damage. And so we think, possess my body or control my body in purity and holiness, treating it with respect. Where's the fun in that? There's lots of fun. If you take Lisa my marriage class, you'll find out the fun that God really intends for us. But for your kids, they just need to know this is not boring, that this is where the good stuff lies. Okay. All right, let's go on. So not only do you need to be able to teach this truth, and some of us have to learn it in more detail ourselves before we can teach it to our kids, but we have to model it. And to be able to model this truth, we got to deal with our own ignorance and damage. This is so important if you want to mentor your kids effectively. You cannot avoid your damage and be an effective mentor. You cannot avoid your own sexual sins, hurts, wounds, and then move right into your kids' problems and issues. You will avoid their issues if you avoid your own. I have a past of sexual abuse. I worked hard to overcome my abuse. I did in many ways. But when my kids became teenagers and before that when they started puberty, my old issues kept coming up and I had to deal with them again. And it was hard. And I was surprised at how much I wanted to run from my kids' issues. Because I had been pretty committed not to, but it's going to stir that old pain and we're going to have to deal with that. How do we deal with it? The first thing we need to do is change our thoughts. And again, I love this passage for sex. Don't copy the behavior and customs of the world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Do you want to get healed? Then let God transform you into a new person, not by erasing your past damage, not by going to psychotherapy for years and years and reliving the whole thing and rewriting your story, but let God change the way you think about things. That's how we heal. God showed me that not all men are alike, that not all men are abusers, that when my husband desired me, it wasn't because he was a pedophile, but because he thought I was beautiful. That was a change of thinking that set me free, you know? And I'm glad now that he can look at me with desire. You know, he's not trying to take something from me. That's not his. He paid a high price for me. And for 37 years, he's paid a high price. I think he's happy he did. But, you know, he's not taking anything that he hasn't bought with his love and his commitment. And so we can change our past and our hurts by letting God change our thinking. And as we do this and our kids see us grow, we will be able to have a more positive view. We will be able to talk to them more and give them that positive vision. All right, let's talk about how to begin to talk to your children. Because we said good mentors not only model truth, but they know how to talk to your kids. So we already said start young, and don't wait till they bring stuff up. You know, as toddlers, they are going to make comments and say things. Answer them. Start the conversation. And we want to answer their questions concisely and factually, and we want to answer them calmly, which means we're going to have to be prepared. But toddlers are going, and kids, all kids of all ages, but toddlers are going to respond to your nonverbal communication more than your verbal. So if they say, where do babies come from? And you say, well, you know, they come from mommies and daddies laying in bed naked together, and, you know, they do things that cause a baby to come. They'll be like, okay. They're not going to ask more. Why? Because you are comfortable, you gave them some facts, they don't know what in the world you're talking about anyway. And so it satisfies them. Okay, and then you want to be able to also start young in talking to them about where danger lies. So as soon as kids start surfing the internet and getting online, they should know about the dangers. Anybody know what's the average age for kids to get into porn? 11 years old, and I think it's more like 10 now. But kids are going to be exposed by that age. So you're going to need to have lessons on dangers of the internet before then. Young children should never surf the internet alone. Because, again, remember, these images come to them. They don't have to go looking for them. All right, I think it's important that kids need to talk to both parents. The boys need to talk to their moms. The girls need to talk to their dads as well as their moms. I think both parents need to be involved in this because, you know, a little girl's daddy can tell her much better how men think and what men really want, and they're going to believe it because a man is telling them. A boy needs to know from a mom what is perspective. And if you start young, they will become comfortable with it. When my kindergartner came home and talked about French kiss, I told her as much as I thought was age appropriate at that time. And then I was like, and I want you to talk to Dad about this too when he comes home. And she's like, you know. And I'm like, no. He knows lots about French kissing, yeah? And so you can ask him too. Because here again, remember in the beginning, I said we don't want to scare them and we don't want them to be overly afraid of it and we don't want them to have a blasé attitude. And so we want them to be comfortable with this kind of stuff. When they start having questions about body parts and about why it feels good to touch certain places, educate them. I think it's more appropriate to educate with books with age appropriate illustrations. I have a grandson who was watching his stepmom nurse a baby, and he was about 8, very, very curious. You know, and so we talked, and his dad went and got a book and showed him all about nursing with the book. Not with real pictures, but with age-appropriate illustrations for kids that I think keeps it a little more from, you know, real clear-cut images, but it explains it. Kids will be able to make better choices if they have right information and if they know the facts and if they're comfortable with body parts. They're not going to be startled or afraid, you know? So somebody says, hey, show me yours and I'll show you mine, and I've already seen that in a book here, you know? I don't know that will always work, but it's more prone if they're prepared. All right, ongoing, we've already talked about that, so that's no big deal. But here, because you're already going to do that, but I love this verse. Write these commandments that I have given you today on your hearts. Get them inside of you and get them inside of your children. Talk about them wherever you are, sitting at home or walking in the street. Talk about them from the time you get up in the morning until you fall in bed at night. And let me qualify this verse. I don't think a neurotic, fearful parent saying, let's talk about sex as soon as you wake, let's pray about sex as soon as you go to bed, you know, let's talk about sex. Of course, I'm not promoting that. But to be prepared, to be comfortable, and to be ready is all the time is the way that you're going to keep your kids talking. All right, let's talk about the fact that we should be able to talk biblically to our kids about sex. If you want your kids to trust God, then you want to be able to say, well, you need to consider this because the Bible says so, not because I say so. You know, they want to rebel against your beliefs at a certain time. And so teach them the passages that talk about sex and give them the understanding about the importance of love and integrity. You know, help them talk about 1 Thessalonians 4. Also, you want to talk graciously. And graciously, I think, means rewarding honesty. The first time that a child says, I've looked at porn, the first time you see them playing doctor with their sibling, the first time that you see, or they talk about that, be prepared to respond graciously. Be able to relate and say, I know how hard it is, I know how interesting this is, I know how good this feels. And be able to and reward honesty. And I think this is going to take prayer, because you know, these kinds of things happen when we're not expecting them. I was talking to a young girl who was talking about some abuse that she suffered from a girlfriend in elementary school. And she told her mom right away, it just happened that her mom was having a party at the house. Her mom was not prepared. And so 15 years later, this kid said, well, I told my mom, but she didn't care. She said, thanks for telling me, but then we never got back to it. You know, so it's going to take preparation and prayer. I'm not saying you stop a party to talk, but you want to make sure that you're ready to not freak out and to not be dismissive, but to be able to respond in the way they need. Transparency. This Brian Gardner did this with me a couple years ago, this talk, and he put that in. I think that we need to be honest with our kids, but I also think we can be too honest in inappropriate ages. So I think that, yes, we don't want to hide. We don't want to give them the impression that we're somebody that we're not. But how much we reveal, when we reveal, I think it's kind of up to the kid. And we have to be sensitive to what they want. But again, stay out of the extremes. They're not your confidants. but you're also not going to try to be somebody you're not. Okay. All right, the next one is you want to talk to them respectfully. You've got to be open to their views. Most of your kids, most likely, are going to be really wrestling with, are Christians wrong to say that homosexuality is wrong or outside of God's design? A lot of your kids will probably come to believe that view. It's going to be taught enough. It's going to be promoted enough. It's a difficult, complex issue. And so you don't want to just say, you're wrong. The Bible says. You want to be willing to engage with them. Ask them how they've come to these conclusions. Why they think this is okay or this is no big deal. And learn to engage them. This is when they're going to want to converse with you. If you just tell them they're wrong and shut them up, you've stopped the conversation, not them. Does that make sense? All right. And then be positive about them. You want to believe in your kids. You want to believe that they want what God wants for them. And you should be confident of that. When I was talking to the high school boys, I said to the leaders that invited me kind of what I talk about and how they want God's designs. And this leader said, Bev, you're never going to convince a bunch of 15-year-olds that they don't want the hot girl, that they don't look at sex as fun. I said, watch me. And as I asked them what they really wanted, and as we compared views, they opened up more and more about their insecurities. They talked more and more about how, of course I have to look like this is what I want, because this is what everybody expects of me. But what I really want is a girl that will respect me. That a girl that will be willing to be a friend instead of just wondering how she looks or, you know. They want what God designed them for. Your girls want that. Your sons want that. Yes, there's a part of them that's going to buy into the lies, and if they think that's what they're supposed to want, they're going to want it. But over and over again, I don't care if it's males or if it's females. I know what God says he designed them for. I know what the holy desire of their heart is. So I know that what they really want. And if we believe that, and we communicate that we believe in them, that's going to be key. I'll tell you one story. I had a new Christian in my office one day talking to me. He was recently divorced. He was having a great time going to the bars, picking up women and young women every weekend. And I'm like, when are you going to be done with this? You're not having fun. Oh, you old lady. Yes, I am. You just forget. I'm like, you are not having fun. And we argued a little bit, and I just kept saying, I know what you really want. And I have this picture that a lot of people know about of a old couple, a very fat woman, very skinny man, in their 70s or 80s, walking naked into the ocean. And I showed him this picture, and I told him the story. And then when I looked over, tears were coming down his face. And he said, of course that's what I want. But I don't have much hope that I'm going to get that. And I'm like, well, that's God's will for you, so that's God's promise, so we can get there. And he is married to a Christian woman today and doing better. But why did I know that about him? because God designed him to want that. I will never, I get furious when I hear Christians teach girls play at sex to get love and men, guys play at love to get sex. The world tells them they should do that. The world tells them they'll be cool if they do that. But if you look into their hearts of hearts, that's not what they want. They want the whole package. We all want love and sex. You know, we don't want to dichotomize them. Okay? All right. Protecting our kids. This is our last point. We do want, like I said before, to try to keep them from danger. Some ideas. I'm sure we can have more and you can help come up with more if you want. But teach them privacy early. I'm not shy about nakedness. Our family, when our kids were little, we weren't like, you know, always hiding ourselves, but we did teach them that there are certain people that have this privilege within a family and others don't. You know, so I wouldn't change my kids' diapers in a public setting, even though they were babies. They should never remember a time where they were exposed publicly to people. Take them to a private room. When they want to be, they become more conscientious of their nakedness and they want privacy. Respect that. That's when it's, you know, running from the bathroom to your bedroom naked is over, because they're going to let us know when they want that privacy. I was at CT in the women's bathroom changing my granddaughter's diaper, and there was someone in there that knew my grandbaby, and she had her daughter, and she said to her daughter, come on, let's go, and let Sophia have her privacy. So instead of talking, they just went to the other side of the room and kept busy. I thought, how great. Because remember, you know, if we wait to teach them these things, they're going to be exposed to so much that they're going to think it's comfortable. So help them set these boundaries. Respect their no. I hate this one. I love to kiss on my granddaughters. I just gobble them up. I just want them to be my little, you know, teddy bear that I just get to be all over. But I can tell when they're squirming and like, that's enough, Grandma, you know, and I have to say, okay. Because I want them to be confident saying no. And I want them to know that people that love them respect their boundaries. Establish boundaries that you want them to have with others and put them in place for yourself. So, you know, we would be careful about who we had hug our kids and who we didn't. They got to choose some of that. We didn't make them hug anyone if they didn't want to. That's a great boundary, because then when somebody older wants to hug them and they don't want to be hugged, they've learned to say no. I work with trafficked victims, women, girls coming out of the sexual exploitation and sex trafficking, and I had one girl that had a little daughter who was 2 years old. And then, you know, I've been with her for years, and by the time she was 4 or 5, she still wanted to be wiped when she went to the bathroom because she couldn't really wipe number 2 too well. And I was not, you know, okay with this. I thought she needed to start learning, but as we were teaching her how to do this herself, I just mentioned to her, anybody who loves you will only wipe you with the toilet paper. They will never let their fingers touch your skin. Won't be skin on skin. It wasn't a big deal. I didn't make it. I just made a fact to help her begin to set those kinds of boundaries. Okay. Watch overnights. I loved when my kids had overnights at our house as well as others. I think it's great. I remember those good things. But it is, kids are exposed to sex sooner. They have more issues. I'm hearing more and more of siblings that have had cross boundaries with each other. And so I'm not against overnights, but I would make sure they weren't sharing a bed. Maybe they were sleeping in sleeping bags in a family room or a living room where there's more supervision. Yeah. That's my own personal opinion, but I just think that helps set real good boundaries for kids. Have children play in open, supervised spaces. I thought I had that down, but I didn't all the time have that down. And, you know, I think we have to be accepting of childhood curiosity. I don't think that's a bad thing, but we want to be careful because kids will get into play more than you think. All right. Now, a second part of protecting your kids is that we need to build the character to so that they can handle danger when it comes. We have to prepare them to respond to danger. No longer do we live in a society where we can only think about protecting our kids from danger. We have to equip them to handle it. So I want to, real quick, these tables here, just count 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Then this section of tables, you guys back 1, 2, 3, and then you guys, just count, everybody count off 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And 3 stands up. 1, 2, 3. You can stand up. 1, 2, 3. Mike, you can stand up. Just go for it. One of you at that table, stand up. Yeah. Okay, Barbie, stand up. All right. Stand. All right. I don't know how many people that we have. There needs to be one more person. Glenda, stand up, I think, here somewhere. I don't know how many people that stand up. Just for a minute. I don't know how many people we have here, but out of the number of people that we have here, roughly this many of you will have to face that your kids will be abused by the age 18. When the statistics are one, now you can sit down. When the statistics are 1 in 3, that's how many are going to have to be prepared to face this. And when the statistics are that many, then we want them to know how to handle it when it comes. Not only to know how to say no, but if something happens, do they have the character to not completely fall apart, shut down, you know, go into hiding? And so how do we build their character? Again, I just came up with some ideas. I'm sure that there's more. But I think when we affirm their curiosity and give them answers, that this is a way for them to build their confidence and their knowledge about sexuality so they're not so gullible and naive, so that they know who to talk to. I told my kids, I want you talking to mom and dad about sex because, and not your friends, because we have sex, so we know about sex. Your friends aren't having sex, so they don't know about sex. So come to me, come to Dad, and we'll answer your questions. All right? And so be willing to affirm that curiosity is a good thing. Make honesty an expected and positive value. Earlier I said reward honesty when it comes, but if you want them to have the character that can talk about this and overcome the shame that comes with them, then for them to know that honesty is expected and that it will be rewarded, it's a positive value, that's important for them to have that in their character. Now, of course, one way we have to do this is learn to be truth tellers and honest ourselves, which sometimes for certain personality types is not easy. But it's important that we make that a value in our home. Teach critical thinking. Don't just shelter them from everything. I would watch TV shows with our kids, and this is another way to get them not so addicted to watching shows or being online all the time. When your kid's online, sit with them. And what are you seeing? And what do you think about that? And what does God say about that? And does that make sense to you? But get them learning to critically evaluate the information that's coming in. You know, when my kids wanted to dress a certain way, I was like, everyone knows that people judge people by a first appearance. So you look in the mirror and you tell me how people are going to judge you. What are they going to think of you? And if you like that, if you like what you're communicating, great. Within limits, of course, but yeah. But if you don't like it and you don't want people to view you that way, then let's go change clothes and see if we can come up with something else. But all of that is a way to teach them to begin to think critically and assess themselves instead of us just telling them. Okay. Allow failure. Do you know that a key part of learning effectively is to fail? Yeah. We learn things when we do it right, but when we have failed and had to work hard at it, then we really know it. And I think that it is better to let our kids, and I'm not saying fail sexually, but because we're talking about building their character in general, but let your kids fail at things and let them suffer consequences when they're younger, so the consequences are less severe and less life-altering. So that when they fail, they are learning, well, I can come and talk about my failure with my parents. They're not going to flip out, you know. And so that we're prepared. And then teach them choices, give them choices where they can, and so that they can learn to make choices. Another one is limit immediate gratification. What is sexual immorality and sexual sin all about? Immediate gratification. And so if you want them to be able to say no to that powerful, you know, urge and force in them, you're going to want to teach them in other ways how to limit their, you know, going after immediate gratification for a long-term value. When our kids were about 6 and 4, we took them to Disney World. And I had them save their allowance and save a bit of their allowance for months. And Christmas presents from grandparents, they got some cash. I said, give them some cash this year because we're saving up money to go to Disney World. And so they had to turn down things they wanted to get with their money. People are like, why are you doing this? I'm like, this is their first lesson in sex. Because they're going to learn that if they say no to getting what they want, this ice cream or this donut or this toy with their allowance, I'm going to take them to Disney World, and when they go into the Disney store, they're going to have money, and they're going to hit the mother load, and they get to spend it. Okay. It worked so well. No, I don't know if it did or not. the point is that the more that we do this and realize that they need this in their character to choose to express their sexuality in the way God intended. They're not going to be able to control themselves if they can't control this in other areas of their life. Okay? I've already covered the be prepared to respond to the bad news. Plan that out. Know how you're going to handle it. And if you are married, husband and wife should pray about this and agree together. Get counsel. You, of course, pray that you'll never have to use it, but we will do it. All right, so it's time, conclusion. This is question and answer. I do want to conclude with something. I hope on one level you guys are sitting here kind of discouraged, thinking, you are asking a lot, and how in the world are we going to do this? If you're feeling the sobriety of this, that's a good thing. But let me tell you that God's will is that you're sexually healthy and satisfied, your kids are, and what is God's will is His promise to us. So He gives us the resources. He gives us His word to correct and teach our children. He gives us His Holy Spirit. He gives us His love. And most of all, He gave us His Son so that we could be free of the sin that enslaves us and keeps us in bondage, the guilt that keeps us paralyzed. He said that you cannot do this on your own. You can't be sexually healthy. You can't teach your kids. So I will come and send my son to earth to live, to model how to be healthy. That's another talk, how Jesus was the most sexually healthy man I've ever read about, that I've ever known. But that's another talk. But he's come and lived, and then he died to forgive us of our sins, to put us back in a relationship with God where we could have all the resources of heaven so that we can have great hope. The fact that I am standing here talking about this, when I was abused from age 5 to age 18 in every kind of sexual way, and I hated men, I wanted to use my sexuality to hurt men. I was a hot mess. I wasn't hot. I was a hot mess. And Jesus Christ changed my life. And so this is one of the reasons I love to talk about this, because I know He gives us hope. I know He gives us healing. And I know that He gives us the ability to change our thinking so that even if our kids do suffer from abuse or bad choices, we can help them change their thinking. And that's what's going to bring healing. I was talking to a young woman who was newly married, who had sexual abuse in her background. She made terrible choices. She had multiple sexual partners through high school in her early 20s. She was in an abusive relationship. She made some really bad choices. She got married, and I was asking her how things were going. She said, they're going great. How could that happen? Because she was taught God's truth. She believed it. She rebelled against it. But when she came back to walking with God. She knew what sex was about. She had her thinking straight and correct, and so she was able to heal quickly. That's the hope that God gives us for ourselves and our children. I'm not saying all people heal as quickly as this young lady did. I didn't. It took longer. But there's healing to be had.